Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
The outstanding Michael Barkan joins us on the show. Sir, welcome back. On a big week like this, it is great to have you on board.
Steve Jones, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. It is great to hear that voice on the other end.
Back at you. Thank you. Thanks for having me, always.
It's a pleasure. And what a fun weekend for the city between the Phillies and the Eagles, and both at home. What is the mood in the city right now, knowing that this weekend is upon us?
The mood is amazing, as you might imagine. I would not quite say it was like 2009. You may recall that the Phillies played the Yankees in the World Series, and the Eagles played the Giants. One of the games was nighttime, and one of the games was daytime. They were both home games, and it was electric. I wouldn't quite say it's like that, but it's up there. I'll tell you, it's up there. You got the Phillies hoping to take a 2-1 lead over Atlanta, the defending world champions, and of course it's Dallas week with regard to the Eagles, and they're hoping for a 6-0 start going into the bye. Would that be amazing or what?
Absolutely, and I will start with the baseball part because of the chronological order of it.
Sure.
And also the fact that it's a playoff. They split in Atlanta. Goal-wise, they achieved a goal, and now Aaron Nola is going to get the ball. When you look at what Nola has done in the clinching game to get to the playoffs and then how he pitched against St. Louis, what's been your thought on watching him, Michael?
I think that he... as cliche as it sounds, I think he has turned some kind of a corner. He's always been a very good pitcher. He was a Cy Young candidate a couple of seasons ago. He has faded from view in recent years in the month of September. And he really got it back going this September, and in particular into October. And they really, as it turns out, they really needed that win that Monday night at Houston. You'll recall that was a rescheduled series. It was supposed to start the season, but because of the lockout, they pushed it to the end of the season. So, they had some doormats that they played prior to that, but they really needed a win against Houston and some help from Milwaukee, and they got it. But Nola pitched that game on that Monday night, the third to last game of the season. And they lost the last two, and you can say, well, they probably did that because they had clinched and they were so excited about it, and I would agree. But Aaron Nola needed to bring it that night in particular, and he did. He needed to bring it against St. Louis, and he did. And the other thing is, Steve, that Aaron Nola pitches much better on 5 days rest rather than 4 days rest. And if you look at his record, I don't have the exact particulars, but he is significantly better. I would say he's average to below average if he's pitching on regular rest. But if he's pitching on 5 days rest rather than four, he is much better. And he will be pitching on that full rest tomorrow, and I think that will make a big difference for the Phillies defense. The question is whether or not they're going to be able to get the runs. Now, I don't know if Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, has posted or announced as yet who's going to be the starting pitcher for the Braves tomorrow. But if it's Spencer Strider, who has been injured, he's had an oblique injury, and he is a rookie pitcher who has dominated the Phillies in the times that they have faced him this season, that would be somewhat concerning because the Phillies can go into these funks offensively, and we've seen that with the top two hitters in their lineup, in Kyle Schwarber and Rhys Hoskins.
Exactly. I was about to bring that up because Hoskins and Schwarber have not hit in this series. What about the familiarity of it? Because it turns out that three of the four series are teams in the division. The only one is the Yankees and Guardians, where it's different divisions. So these guys have played each other 21 times already now. In this. What is the familiarity meant on both sides, in your opinion, Michael?
I think the familiarity is significant. It's not everything, but it's significant. The Phillies were 8-11 in the regular season against the Braves. They went down there for that last series, and unfortunately, they dropped a couple of the games. Otherwise, the Phillies could have come away with winning the season series, but no matter now. I think that it comes down to pitching, and you can be as familiar as you like with the opposition. But if you can't hit the pitching, which was the case last night, unfortunately, for the Phillies, and Zach Wheeler had the same thing going on into the sixth inning. He was perfect through three innings, for goodness sakes. And in the sixth inning, he puts two guys on, he hits a batter, he walks a guy, and then, you know, that last play. This is all with two outs, Steve. And then Matt Olson comes up, and ground ball to Rhys Hoskins at first base. And I hate saying this about a player, I really do, but he has butchered the position since 2019 when he moved there from left field. And he'll get you 30 home runs. He'll get you the 90 or so runs batted in. That's all well and good. But he's cost them games at first base. And it happened last night. We don't know that they would have won had he made that play, but we do know that there would have been no runs scored in the bottom of the sixth inning by the Atlanta Braves. So it's a frustration, certainly, with many, many Phillies fans. And I don't know what the answer is, but he said after the game that he misjudged the speed of the ball coming off the bat, which is why he hit the dirt so quickly, and the ball played him. So you can't have it, though. And then they get two more runs after that, and you know in a playoff situation against the world champs, that's more than enough.
Yeah, no question. In fact, people know that listen to the show on a regular basis. I've said once, I've said 1,000 times on the show, you'd be surprised what a good defensive first baseman means to the entire infield. And that's why when I look, for example, like, you know, the value of an Anthony Rizzo to the Yankees, Rizzo makes that play last night.
Absolutely. And I would say the majority, the overwhelming majority of major league first basemen make that play.
Yeah.
They called it a hit. To me, it's an error, period, end of story.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Michael, about that. So now you got to put that behind you. You got to take care of business in this. And it does come down to the offense. What have the – I mean, we know the Braves have really terrific pitching. A lot of the same parts are there from last year's World Championship team. What's missing, though, offensively right now for the Phillies from what they've been saying?
As I mentioned before, what's missing offensively is the leadoff man, Kyle Schwarber, and the number two guy, Rhys Hoskins, failing to hit. And Schwarber has set a club record now, an ignominious club record. He has started the postseason 0-16, and that record was set back in 1915. And the Phillies were in the World Series that year. Of course, it was a completely different playoff setup. You just went right to the World Series if you won your league. And he started out, what the heck was the guy's name? Bert Nittbauer. He started out 0-4-12. And so now Schwarber's got that beat. And Hoskins has won just one hit, and that was two nights ago. And when you have your first two guys who are supposed to be your table setters failing to do that, then all of a sudden your leadoff man becomes, in effect, JT Realmuto with Bryce Harper batting second. And I asked the postgame show last night, I asked Ricky Vitalico and Ben Davis and Ruben Amaro Jr., former major leaguers all, I said, would you rearrange the lineup? And Ricky said absolutely not. Ben said yes, and Ruben said, I hear what you're saying, and I would consider it, but probably not. So you've got a variety of opinions. But I think at this point, if they're failing to hit to that degree, I mean, it's a club record. You have to do something.
Yeah.
And I might shuffle that lineup just a little bit and move Schwarber and Hoskins further down.
I agree with your point. I would, too, and it's not a panic move. It's just a common-sense move because, remember, this record was set when Babe Ruth was pitching for the Red Sox.
Okay, right. That's exactly
okay.
Right.
Just so
George Herman was pitching at Fenway.
That's when the record was set, when Ruth was a pitcher. Okay. So which then brings up Robbie. He's got the 2-year contract now. I got it. How do you think he has handled the stretch run and the first two games of the series at the helm of all this?
I think he's handled it pretty well. There are always moves that can be questioned all the time. And you never realize how quickly baseball moves along until you start taking notes on every single pitch and on every single play. And when you realize what the possibilities could be on any particular play. And so I think Rob Thompson has handled the lineup up till now. the pitching staff up till now, the bullpen up till now. I think he's handled it pretty darn good, and we'll see how he does it going forward. I may have told you this before, but the Phillies' former Hall of Fame general manager, Pat Gillick, used to say, I think during the course of a 162-game season, that a manager really makes a difference in about 10 games the whole season. Now, I don't know, with all due respect to Pat, I don't know if I agree with that. I think the manager is responsible for way more than that in his impression on a team and stewardship of a team. But the fact is, if the players aren't hitting, if they're not fielding, then you can't blame that on the manager. What you can blame the manager for is he bringing the right guys in to face the right batters? Does he have the lineup in the right order? And I think so far he has. The question is, what's he going to do with regard to Schwarber and Hoskins at leadoff and batting second? And I think probably nothing. And, remember, the devil you know is better than the devil you'll meet. And right now the devil they know is 1-for-34 between those two guys, and that's terrible. Yeah. But you don't want the whole team to stop hitting. And Bone's been hitting, and Harper's batting like .573 in the postseason. Castellanos had himself a heck of a game one. He didn't have a hit last night. Segura has been really solid. So I don't know. And I might put Segura at leadoff if I was going to make that move. Or Stott. But I don't know that you mix it up right now, because the vibe in baseball, as you know, Steve, is an important thing. And while they're not hitting, you don't want to send a message that I have no faith in this lineup the way it is, and I'm just going to blow it up and make some adjustments. Because they'd have to be pretty significant, I would think.
Yeah. I've got to now ask you about the Cowboys-Eagles. Eagles are 5-0 to this point. Is this a matter of natural growth by the Eagles that started last year, or are there a couple of things that are a little bit different about this team? Obviously, Brown's a big addition, but I mean, that a little bit different about the dynamics of this team that you're seeing that maybe you hadn't seen before?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I certainly think there's growth, primarily with Jalen Hurts at the quarterback position. I think what he did in the offseason was phenomenal. He went to see the former major league pitcher Tom House out in California. He works with other pitchers. He works with quarterbacks, and I think he worked on the mechanics of Hertz's throwing motion and playing the position. And I think that's huge. And we're so, as you know, Steve, we're so impatient in our sports scene in general, and certainly in Philadelphia, to want guys to come to fruition and blossom immediately. And it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in life, and it doesn't happen in sports. And you got a guy like Jalen Hurts, who's still a young guy, who has been all over the place with regard to college football and playing at Alabama and then Oklahoma and then coming to the Eagles and being a backup and then taking over for Carson Wentz. I mean, there's a lot going on there. And so it takes a while to transition. It takes a while. You talk about the game slowing down. It takes a while for that to happen. If his name was Joe Burrow or his name was Kyler Murray, we wouldn't be talking about any of this. He would just be the quarterback of the future. Leave him alone. He'll blossom into the position. But he wasn't drafted there. He was drafted well down the draft board. And so we're like, come on. I mean, this guy's not doing it yet. We got to move on from him. And you'll recall all the talk coming into the season was, if he can't do it with Miles Sanders, Devontae Smith, and A.J. Brown, and that offensive line, if he can't do it, then they've got to move on from him at the quarterback position. And I think they sold him short. You got a kid who is the son of a coach, who acts like a coach on the field, who's never satisfied, who has a different ticker. He really does. And I think he's going to be. I think he's going to be a great one. And I said that 3 years ago, 3 seasons ago.
You did.
When he. I think it was his second career start at Arizona. It was an Eagles loss, and he did everything, but score enough points for them to win that game. And people were kind of stunned when I came out on the post game show and I said, "You've just seen the future of the quarterback position for the Philadelphia Eagles." They were like, whoa, take it easy. And I said, "Did you see it? Did you just see what he can throw, he can pass, he can read defenses. The thing is, as other teams prepare for you as a young quarterback, you have to react to that. And I think that's what he spent this past offseason doing. And he's looking, he's an MVP candidate, almost 6 weeks in.
No question. Darn, you're good.
One more thing, Steve.
Yeah,
this 6-0 start, and Jaws sent me this. Ron Jaworski, how about that for a name drop? Ron Jaworski sent me this chart. And you can get it on one of the websites. But at 5-0, a team that's 5-0 has a nearly 90% chance to make the playoffs, a nearly 75% chance to win the division. This is going back to 1990. And a 15% plus chance to win the Super Bowl. That's 9 of 59 teams that have started 5-0. If you get to 6-0, making the playoffs goes to 95%. Winning the division goes to 83%, and winning the Super Bowl goes to 22%. That would be 9 of 41 teams starting at 6-0, going back to 1990. So that ain't nothing, man. And, you know, I know you can make numbers say a lot of different things, but that's just the facts of it. So I like the odds that they can take care of Dallas. And also, going into the bye week, you don't want a loss going into the bye week, even if you are facing Pittsburgh coming out.
Darn, you're good. I love talking to you.
I'm trying, man. I know I'm on the Steve Jones show, for goodness sake.
You're getting it done. Michael, you're getting it done. Hey, thanks so much for the time today. It is always great with a capital G to have you on.
Back at you, Y with a capital Y right there. You.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Steve. Talk soon.